Hi, I'm Ray. I'm an alcoholic. Everybody can hear me, I think. All right. Thank you. First, I want to thank all my friends who are here right now to support me. This is what fellowship is all about, right? All the chatter we heard beforehand, everybody laughing and connecting. This is one of the main reasons that keeps me coming to meetings. My friends said, oh, yeah, I'm not going to miss this tonight. And that's a special thing, because when I arrived here, I didn't have that in my life. And I don't want to forget that. And I want to thank Larry for asking me to speak, and Jim always being there for to support me. And Death Valley Pete, all the way from California. Pete and I were in the same step group, I don't know, 30 years ago, I guess, something like that. So it's great to see everybody. That's what fellowship is all about, as far as I'm concerned. I guess to my story. My sobriety date is March 1st, 1987. And I've been very fortunate in that after I came into Alcoholics Anonymous then, I haven't had to pick up a drink or a drug. So I've been very, very fortunate. And I understand that, because people who have come in after me, I've been at their funerals. And people who, you know, they've gone back out. So I've been very, very blessed, you know. I thought about what I wanted to say, because, you know, it's an old timers meeting. I don't want to just give my drunk log like as if I was speaking. I would guess I will do that. But I want to talk about what it means to be 34 years sober. I mean, in my life anyway. I was speaking at a meeting a couple of weeks ago, and one of my friends, Mike C., said, wow, you've been sober 34 years. You can actually stay sober a lifetime. And when he said that, it struck me, because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm sober today. You know, we have an anniversary. I got a medallion a few days ago, but I'm sober right now. And I've been sober right now for 34 years, because, you know, if you're new right now and you're listening to this, I will tell you right now, I didn't do anything different today than I did 34 years ago. In the morning, I was told, the old timers in the old days would tell us, you get up in the morning, get on your knees. I've always had a higher power in my life, but they said, you have to get on your knees. There's a physical thing about getting on your knees that makes you feel, I guess it humbles you. I don't know. So I listen to these guys. So I get on my knees this morning. I said my prayers. And I always ask God, the one thing that has changed through the years, I used to ask God to keep me away from a drink or a drug. I haven't done that in years. I ask God for, please give me the strength and courage to be able to do his will for me, because that's what, you know, it's all about, his will and the power to carry that out. So, and I don't think his will is for me to drink or get high. And that's been the case so far. Tonight, before I go to bed, I will also do the same thing. I'll be back on my knees. Thank you for another day of sobriety. After I get on my knees in the morning, I meditate for anywhere from 5 minutes to an hour, depending on how much time I have. I will tell you, I can do that because I've been retired almost 10 years. When I was working, it was much more of a struggle. I would always get on my knees, but I wouldn't always meditate because, oh, I got to go to work. I got to whatever. So I've been very fortunate in my retirement that I've been able to work on the spiritual part of my life, I guess, a little bit better, you know? So if you're new here, I haven't done anything different today than I did then. But to go back to it, once again, if you're new or relatively new around here, what the difference is, you'll hear people say sometimes in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I disagree with the statement. They'll say to you, well, I get up at 7 o'clock this morning. So if you get up at 6:30, you're more sober than I am, or you're sober longer than I am. I disagree wholeheartedly with that statement. And I'm going to tell you what time means to me. When I first came here, even my first year, I was 2 months sober, and I went to a meeting. I heard a kid tell my story, and the kid woke me up. He was 18 years old. He told my story, and I identified as an alcoholic. And after 2 months of coming to meetings and not hearing my story and thinking this is all crap, all of a sudden the kid spoke, and he like, boom, turned the lights on. And so I accepted my illness that day, and my life changed at that day, right? But for the next few months, and I was, you know, I get on the pink cloud they talk about, and months later I went out and started sharing and stuff like that in meetings. But the truth is, my first year was not good. It was miserable. I had all the battles in my body, in my head. I had all of that stuff. And through the years, I've been a member of a 12 and 12 step group since I've been sober. So I've been reading the steps for almost 34 years every week. And I walked through the steps, and I tried to live the steps as they talk about. I've done them. But what's happened is 34 years later, all that pain and struggle that I had my first few years, that's behind me. That's the important thing I want you to know. If you're coming around for a period of time and you're still miserable or whatever, you have to understand that there's hope. You know, these things, and they used to always tell us time, right? There's an acronyms for everything, right? Things I must earn and all that stuff they talk about, right? If you, from my personal experience, if I continue to go to meetings and try to live the principles of the 12 steps of this program, and try to especially help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety, as it says in our preamble, which I've tried to do for 34 years, you can have a good life, and you can be sober every day, and you can die sober. My sponsor, you know, Sue, who's on here right now, her husband Frank was my sponsor for 28 years until he passed away. He was 33 years sober when he died. He died sober. My father-in-law was 33 years sober when he died. He died sober. We can do this a day at a time. I will tell you also that I was one of these guys at the beginning. I was always looking for my next chip, always looking for my next medallion. I was always looking for the next thing. It took me quite a bit of time to be here right now, just to not worry about what's happening tomorrow or what happened yesterday. It took me a long time to get to be here right now. So if I can give any advice to a newcomer, learn how to enjoy your sobriety right now. Don't think it's going to be great at 1 year or 5 years or 10 years, because life is going to happen to you as you go through. That's what's happened to me. I've been through weddings. I've been through deaths. I've lost friends. I've gained friends. In other words, life has happened, and I've been able to do this sober. So, to get back a little bit, to my story, now that I've said that, my story, I as a kid, I grew up, I was full of fear, doubt, and insecurity, like most of us are. I enlisted in the Air Force when I was 16 years old. When I was 17, I went into the Air Force. And a year and a half later, I went off to the war. I was a radar controller. And I drank a couple of times, but only a couple of times. I may have gotten drunk once or twice, but it was nothing. I was in the war for about 5 days. And one of the guys said, "Hey, do you want to get down to the Airman's Club and meet the boys?" I said, "Absolutely." So we get down to meet the boys, right? And I get legless. We used to talk about it. I think a beer was a nickel and a shot was a dime. I think that's what it cost us, right? Because they knew, we have these young warriors around here. They got to keep you in line, so they let you drink cheap, So anyway, I got really, really, really drunk with these guys. And I remember, and I say this all the time, we step outside the Airman's Club, and we've been listening to music inside, and I am so drunk, and these guys are so drunk, and we got our arms around each other, right? And we're swaying back and forth and singing songs, right? And I am in heaven. All that fear, doubt, insecurity that I had as a kid growing up was gone. I am surrounded by jungle. There's snipers in the jungle. Nobody's shooting at us currently. It didn't matter. I was like, oh my God. And I made a conscious decision that day. I am going to be like this every moment I can be for the rest of my life, because I had found the magic elixir. All right. And I won't tell you that I was, drunk every day after that, but I'll tell you right now, that set, I made a conscious decision about my alcoholism right then. And those of you who remember the war, that period of time, I get right into the drugs over there. I ended up getting addicted to heroin. And then Christmas time of 1970, Christmas toward the end of my tour, I knew that I was coming back to the States in February. I better get off this stuff because I'm sure I can't get heroin back home. I live in Lowell, Massachusetts. I mean, you think I would? I didn't know, So, but God kept me stupid. So I decided to stop smoking heroin. And for 3.5 days, I was supposed to be in Bangkok, Thailand for R&R, and 3.5 days I'm in my hooch. Withdrawing from heroin, a lot of pain, throwing up, hallucinations. It was crazy. And the reason I tell that story at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting is because if I had known by just smoking some more heroin, all that would have gone away, I would have done it in a heartbeat. But the God of my understanding kept me stupid. That's what happened. And guess what? I haven't touched heroin since December of 1970. I am so grateful beyond words, I'm telling you. But, so for the next 17 years, I get sober. My last drunk was February of 1970. February of 1987 was my last drunk. So for the 17 years that I drank and drugged. Believe me, I just didn't do any opiates anymore. I like to do speed and go up. I loved LSD. But I drank all the time. If somebody would say to me, "What was your thing? All right, take it all away. Give me the booze. Give me the booze." I loved it, And the way I drank, by the way, I was an obsessive drinker. If I was drinking beers, I used to like to drink dark beer. I'd only drink dark beer. If I was drinking, I went to this period, I'd have a period of whiskey sours. That's all I would drink. I went to a period of drinking Grand Marnier. If you ever drank a bottle of Grand Marnier, all you do is sweat it out of your system. It's like pure sugar, right? But that's what I would do. I'm obsessive about it. I will not alter what I'm doing because I found out from that kid who woke me up at that meeting that I am obsessive and compulsive. I have a mental obsession and physical compulsion. I am an obsessive compulsive guy. And by the way, if I was to show you the room I'm sitting in, this is my music room. It's loaded with guitars because I am obsessive compulsive. And that means even in sobriety. All right. Because quite often, especially my first few years of sobriety, I'll tell you right now, I wasn't drinking or drugging, but when I was looking for relief, a new guitar would suit me just fine. Because I would go, I had to give myself something. I had a hole inside me I didn't understand at the time. I had to fill it. Oh, this new toy will do it. Or this new this, or this new that. See, it took me a while of working on myself to understand, no, it's an inside job. My sponsor used to tell me that, Ray, it's an inside job. This is where it works. This is where it happens, you know. So, you know, I spent years doing that, you know, and I'll tell you right now, my first probably half of those 17 years, boy, was it fun getting drunk? Was it fun getting high? It was. And then one night it flipped on me. I couldn't tell you when that happened. But the next day, I did my usual smoking my pot, drinking, everything else. It didn't take the pain anymore. It didn't take it away. It didn't stop the circus in town. Not only did it not stop the circus, it seemed like it gave it fuel. The circus called all his friends in. And now I had to drink every day because I have the physical addiction to it. The physical compulsion, I've got it. And a mental obsession, I would obsess about, have I got enough dope? Have I got enough booze, right? I like to say this, at the end of my drinking, I could have a case of beer, an 8-ball of cocaine, and an ounce of pot. And before I tasted any of it, I'd be thinking, what am I going to do when this is gone? Because that's what had come to me. I couldn't get drunk and I couldn't get sober. That's right. That's how I ended up in the halls of Alcoholics Anonymous. So you heard about my first drunk, my last drunk, in a very public place. I was at the Golden Gloves in Lowell, at the Lowell Auditorium. I was with a friend of mine who's now deceased, and I got pretty drunk and we got pretty high. Now I feel like I'm going to throw up. So I got to make my way to the men's room. In the men's room at the auditorium, I think the women's room is the same thing. This huge, it used to be a huge archway opening. No door, I think, you just kind of go through the opening. And I'm staggering over there, staggering, right? Trying to make my way in. And I want to get to the bathroom so I can throw up in a toilet, right? And as I'm getting right near the opening, I start throwing up. And I just fall through the opening. I lean against the wall and I am puking all over myself, sitting on the floor. And of course, when I get done throwing up, I feel better because I get rid of it, right? And I look up, and as I look up, this young father, probably in his 30s, is walking by with his son, maybe 6 or 8 years old, and he's looking at me on the floor, covered in puke, in utter disgust and disdain. I can picture that guy's face right now. I don't ever want to forget that, because as he's looking at me like this, inside of me, I'm saying to him, you don't understand, this is not me, this is not who I am. And in actual fact, it's exactly who I am. I am a fall down public drunk who pukes all over himself. Didn't do it all the time, but that's what it comes down to. So I went from the magic of that first drunk, the magic of it, to what alcohol promised, to what alcohol really delivered at the end. That's what happened to me. I mean, I'm almost tearing up thinking about it. That was my 17-year journey. And through the grace of God, I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous. Who knew? Who knew? You know, and clearly from the grace of my higher power that I got here. Set of circumstances got me here, but I got here. And as I said, I came for the first couple of months and never heard my story, ever. Went to a West Chelmsford Monday night meeting. A young kid, as I said, 18 years old, got up and he told his story. And when he was telling the story for the first time, I could identify, like, oh my God, that's me. And all of a sudden I accepted this. What they talk about Alcoholics Anonymous, the idea that I was an alcoholic, which I knew mentally, it went from here right to here. The longest distance we'll ever travel as an alcoholic, right to my heart. My heart exploded like, oh, I'm an alcoholic. Wow. And the picture became clear. It did. And for the last 34 years, I've been trying to clear up. That's what I've been trying to do. If I have a regret, by the way, of that night, and I say this all the time, one of my regrets is not going up to that kid and saying, hey, kid, thank you for taking the time to come out from Boston to speak, because he changed my life. And because he changed my life, he gave me the opportunity to help other people change their lives. Because he spoke, he changed me. I get very active with Drake It Open Door. It's still my group for 34 years now. For my first 18 years of sobriety, I was speaking everywhere. You couldn't shut me up. But the point is, I was able to tell my story, and people come up to me and say, wow, thanks. I needed to hear that. And then I know that they would indeed, some of them would go on and tell their story. And so what I did then, that kid did for me, what I did and what I'm doing right now is no different than Bill making a phone call to Henrietta Sieberling and going to talk to Bob. One drunk talking to another. All these years later, was it 85 years later, 86 years later, all these years later, we're still doing the same thing, only now we do it on Zoom. Who could have seen it, right? Who could have seen it? You know, I'm grateful beyond words for this. You know, I am grateful. I'll tell you a couple of things. If I could change anything, I would. The one thing is, I've never, ever, ever, ever read my big book at home, ever. All right? I wish I did. So what I did was I joined a big book meeting, and we read it every week. And I must have read this book, I don't know, in 34 years, 30 times. Right. And when I found out that when I read this book in a room full of people and we share ideas, they point out stuff to me I never even saw before, even though I read it 30 times. Wow, when did they put that in there? Right? This is our manual, right? As I said, I've been a member of 12 and 12 step. Gotta work the steps in our lives, right? At least for me, I have to do that. I have to try to live by those principles. There's discussion meetings, there's meditation meetings. We have a lot of opportunity here. But having said all that, you know, the magic for me is what we saw, the chatter before when all this started. It's fellowship. It is fellowship. I mean, I almost get emotional thinking about it. My friends are here to support me, like I said earlier. They came on because they knew I was here and they wanted to make me, here, Ray, we're here for you. Except for one person here, all my other friends, I didn't know them before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. It's given me a life that I can't even begin to express what it's done for me. It can't. You know, I'll tell you one of the stories that I'll go back to the second. I tell you, they couldn't shut me up my first 18 years, right? So one day I decided to go to a meeting where nobody knew me. So I went to Manchester, New Hampshire, out of Lowell. I drive up to Manchester. I walked in the front door and somebody looked at me and says, oh, does Drake have the commitment? Now, I was 30 miles from home. And that's how well-known I got to be. And the benefit of that, and this is what the benefit is that people know me. When I was 27 years sober, I wanted to drive into a bridge abutment. I was in the cellar. I was in the pits. And I was at a meeting.
It's 2 minutes, Ray.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Erica. I was able to express that. A friend of mine came up and started smacking me in the chest. She said, Ray, it's in here. Wake up. She didn't say, oh, my God, poor Ray. I wish I could help you out. No. Boom. Wake up. And she woke me up. That's what our friends in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous do. If they know you, if they know who you are. So if you're new here, you're coming around, get in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Work, don't try to be, and this is another thing too, I'll tell you real quick. Don't try to be me or anybody else. Find out who you are, because that's what this journey is all about. That's what the 12 steps are all about, is awakening. So I wish you well. Please come along with us. So thank you for letting me share tonight.